the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site that covers the Arizona Cardinals. My co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com for this show, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. We're episode 533. We did get a bonus episode, me and Howard Balzer and I. That show dropped on Thursday. Seth and I are recording on Thursday night. This is our part two. This is show number two of our four Cardinals 2024 draft previews. In our show earlier in the week, we talked about the offensive side of the ball, but specifically the areas where the Cardinals have the greatest need, receiver and the offensive line, interior and at tackle. Seth, we're going to talk positions that are certainly not priorities. In fact, we could argue that one of them is an absolute waste. And then the other ones are, you know, find something if nice if you want. Because quarterback, obviously, we feel they're in a good spot. But running back, as much as we like the running back room right now, neither James Conner nor Michael Carter is under contract after this season. So it's kind of like the predominant theme throughout the roster is that the Cardinals thus far have not committed to the future. But that's not what we're going to talk about. We're on a draft preview too, Seth. Quarterbacks. Should the Cardinals, like, I thought Clayton Kune was a waste of a pick last year. I wrote about that after the draft. I didn't like the pick. I have no problem with him as the quarterback prospect. And I'm like, but the roster that they had last year, what in the world did they draft in a quarterback for? Anyway.
Yeah, and that was the question. But I guess with just the uncertainty of Colt last year, right? Like they probably
and it turned out that he was cooked.
Yeah, if they felt like they needed to. I mean, I'm still with you. You probably could have got something quicker and faster, with, you know, done. And I know they wanted Josh Dobbs in free agency. That's where he's been told a million times. We know that. But, like, you know, it's tough. And I mean, let's be honest. Drafting a quarterback on day three is basically the biggest of lottery tickets, right? Like, it's
right.
Just a scratcher, and it's one that if you get your money back, like, you're like, oh, okay, I won. And so
right, like, you've got the Brock Purdy story going on, and that's fantastic. Brock Purdy, what he's doing in the NFL is something special. Tom Brady obviously did it. Dak Prescott? He was a fourth round pick, wasn't he?
Yeah, Dak, and if you look at it, you know, it's Dak, it's obviously Brock, you know, it's those guys, and then after that...
Kirk Cousins as well, because they had drafted right. RG3, wasn't he third or... He was third or fourth round, Kirk was way back when in 2011.
Correct, and you know, and that's the thing, though, is, you know, I'm going through every team right now, and the day three picks, you know, because even day two, you're still spending a decent pick. I mean, for the most part, but I mean, Aiden O'Connell, like, is that what you want to go with? Right?
Well,
like,
that's the part we say is, like, you can draft a quarterback and you've got a few stories, but they're always guys, like, with the exception of Brock Purdy. And even 2 years into his career and the numbers he's put up, people are still like, is Brock Purdy good? We don't know.
Right.
Like,
and so it just makes it tough. And so, you know, everybody looks at it and goes, everybody wants the idea of, like, drafting one and developing one and then trading it for a higher pick. And it's like, that's not real life. I mean,
that's Andy Reid.
Right. And he did it, like, what, once or twice? Like, it's not like he did it very often. So it's just a, you know, it's interesting because you've got, yeah, I'm looking, I mean, it's literally San Francisco, Denver right now with Jarrett Stidham. You know, we mentioned the Raiders, obviously, with Aiden O'Connell as of this moment. Obviously, the Bears, but we know that's changing shortly. Like you said, the Falcons now, because Kirk Cousins, but to be fair, they were just with who? Desmond Ridder.
Desmond Ridder was a second-round pick. And
right, a debut pick. So that's the thing is, you know, I mean, the prime example, and obviously, you know, talk about Clayton Tune, but the prime example or that is, you look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, what they did, right? They're like, okay, we got Tom Brady. Let's get somebody that can sit behind him and develop and become the guy after Tom Brady. So they drafted Kyle Trask with the last pick of the second round, and Kyle Trask has thrown exactly 10 more NFL passes than you and I. and he was drafted in 2021. So, I mean, he's played 3 seasons and has thrown exactly 10 more passes than Jess and I. Like, that's just, it's just a crapshoot, man. And it is a lot. It's truly the biggest of lottery tickets because obviously, you know, at wide receiver and even running back and, you know, obviously multiple positions like corner and defensive positions, there are multiple guys on the field. There's one quarterback on the field.
Right.
There's only one, and you don't rotate him. There's one guy that gets reps, and that is, you know, it is hard to get the reps you need and see the field and get experience that you need in practice. Because again, you know, Jess and I have been banging this drum for what, 4 or 5 years now. They don't really practice anymore. Like, the practices aren't
the
bad.
game plan right. Basically,
but it's basically install all the time, right? And there's not the practices that there were back in the day, you know, and all that stuff. But it's just, you know, that's what it is, and you have to get through it and get over it and just kind of move on. So, you know, it's a lottery ticket, and so that's the question. Do you believe in buying lottery tickets and throwing them away every year? Or
as we talked about, as people listening, they're like, well, yeah, that's what we
yeah,
do.
Right.
That's what we do every week. Right.
Right. And so that's what you have to ask yourself is, you know, how do you decide, what do you do, and how do you go about it? And so, you know, I think it's going to be interesting. It feels almost consensus at this point that 3 quarterbacks are going with the first 3 picks.
Yeah.
We know Caleb Williams is virtually locked into the first pick.
They might as well sign a contract.
Right. and so number 2 and 3 are up in the air, and it's between 3 guys. And it really seems like it's down to 2 guys, right? Like, it seems like the J.J. McCarthy supernova has kind of fallen back just a touch.
A little bit.
And now that number 2 pick is down to Drake May or Jaden Daniels, right?
Right, right. And that's kind of the thing there. It doesn't feel like Caleb Williams to me looks like he'll be a good NFL quarterback, right? Doesn't he give you that feel that he may not be great, but with the skill set that he has, he should be a decent quarterback, right?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing with Caleb that he's going to have to, and people are going to have to, is he's a very good athlete, but he's not Kyler Murray. He's not Lamar Jackson. He's closer to, you know, Patrick Mahomes level. He's not as big as Josh Allen. You know, he doesn't have the arm of those guys. So some of the things he got away with in college is just, he's going to learn the hard way.
Well, he's going to have to learn how to play within the system and trust his guys, because, you know, a lot of the things that he did at USC, especially this last year, the highlights you see are when things broke down.
Right. Or when he had 7 seconds to stand in the pocket. And it's like, I mean, that was my biggest thing. So I mean, obviously I've watched a lot of Caleb Williams, but when I watched him against ASU,
he had monster numbers, and I came away from that game not highly impressed by him as a quarterback. But in fairness, everything he threw was wide open.
Yeah, and so that's the hardest part, is like, how do you separate the good and the translatable from the spectacular and the that's not going to work in the NFL. So that's the question with him. You know, you and I are ASU alums. You're a much more ardent fan than I. You have season tickets to ASU. You support them very, very much. And I think you and I are kind of on the same page, and it's not out of bitterness because we don't tend to care. I mean, we're you know, you're much, I don't want to call you a diehard, but you're a big time ASU fan. And, but I don't feel like you have any bitterness towards Jaden Daniels. So our concerns with Jaden Daniels, and it's funny, I was talking with my buddy Kyle Posey about this. Kyle runs Niners Nation, been doing draft work for a real long time, coaches high school football at a high level. You know, we had a long conversation about Jaden. And the question you have, or the question that you get to with Jaden Daniels is, honestly, can he play and keep himself healthy?
Yeah. Yeah.
The things about Kyler and Lamar and these, you know, whether it's Kyler, who's shorter, Lamar, who's, you know, rail thin, like Jaden Daniels, you look at these guys, they don't take big shots. They rarely get hit square and rarely get hit hard. Jaden Daniels thinks he's Josh Allen. I mean, he
and it was fun to watch when he was at ASU, but like in the pros, all those are grown men. The NFL is full of grown men in the NFL.
And I honestly, like, it's definitely hyperbole, but I honestly am like, dude, he might die. Like, the way he allows himself to get hit sometimes, you're just like, oh man, that's not safe. Like,
yeah, it's some of the, he will hurdle himself. He'll try to, don't do that in the pros. But honestly, if you look at that, like, look at RG3 in that rookie season and kind of look at how that changed his career. Jaden Daniels, like, when he was a freshman at ASU, I was so excited because he felt Kyler Murray like in terms of talent, and the talent is there. I think for him, it comes down to two things. It's going to come down to health and whether he can process things quickly. And that's one of the major things that you said, and what CJ Stroud was so excellent at. He's so anticipatory. He knows where to go with the ball and puts it there before it needs to be there. And Kyler even struggled a little bit with that, is that sometimes his reads are a touch late. And he's getting better about that. And I think he's going to even be even better this year. But Jaden Daniels, with the type of offense and the talent he had around him, even at ASU, a lot of the plays that he makes, what you don't get are tight throws in small windows, like small windows that you have to anticipate. And Josh Rosen, who was a very, very good quarterback in college, really struggled with that after the first couple of games, and he got hit lots.
Yeah, and that's what worries me, is he's just not the same build. He's not the same size. He's not the same, you know, girth, and he takes those same shots. And like you said, that's now it's grown men hitting you. It's not guys that are running speed and agility clinics or coaching youth football or, you know, or selling insurance. And I'm not trying to disparage any of these guys. They're better football players than I could ever hope to be. But at the same time, you know, it's just not a winning strategy in that sense. If I had my druthers, and people think I'm crazy, and that's okay. If I was picking a quarterback out of this class, I would take Drake May.
It's just a little bit easier to bet on, right?
Yeah, I mean, you get the Justin Herbert vibes a lot, and that, you know, that's fairly accurate in who he is as a player. I think people were disappointed in him this year just because they expected a leap, but, you know, we've talked about it, even like when I talked about Tez Walker, like he never ended up where people expected him to be, and it really hurt Drake as much as it did anybody else. And so for that, you look at it and you go, I don't know, you know, what, where do you find him? How do you, and all that stuff. So, you know, May is a guy that I just love what he brings. He's got a little, you know, Brett Favre gunslinger in him, and that's going to be an issue, kind of like what we talked with Caleb Williams. But you know, the size at 6'4.5", the build, the arm talent is just insane. He feels like his ceiling is similar to like what Justin Herbert is, and that's not a negative at all. You know, that's a very strong positive. And so, you know, if you like that, I don't have an issue with Jaden Daniels or Caleb Williams. It's just I like what Drake May brings from that point of view.
Yeah.
And then you get to JJ McCarthy, and you know, I've made this comp, and I don't know how people feel about it, but I think you and I have even talked about it a little bit. McCarthy is like a little bit more souped up version of Brock Purdy, right? Like
kind of, yeah. And I think in the right situation, I was listening to it was one of the ESPN draft podcasts. I can't remember why I had it on. I was listening to yours, and then I turned on another one for some clip, and I just kept playing draft podcast after draft podcast. I loved the way they described JJ McCarthy. If you squint, you can see Drew Brees.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that. And, you know, the hard part is, obviously, that you have to look at the reality that he hasn't done it yet. So it's not that it's not there, right? Like a lot of it is there, but he's just never had to do it. He's never had, I mean, you look at his numbers.
Well, you have the fourth quarter numbers. His fourth quarter numbers were wild because he didn't have to throw fourth quarter passes. What did he have, like 35 fourth quarter passes all year?
And I don't have them offhand, but yeah, it was something insane like that. But he looks the part. I put him on that Kirk Cousins metric, which is, you know, you might always want to upgrade as a fan, but then as soon as you want to upgrade, you're going to realize what you had type of thing. And he's just, you know, he's a polarizing guy. Cause is that a guy you take it for if you trade up with the Cardinals? Is it a guy you replace Daniel Jones with if you're the Giants and you know, he doesn't go and nobody trades up for him. And all of a sudden you're sitting there at six and you go, all right, do we do this? Like, is this an upgrade? And I feel like it is an upgrade. Cause I feel like he is, at worst, a very much improvement in terms of ball handling, and in the sense that he's not going to turn the ball over a lot. But I just, the meteoric rise, and obviously it has to come to fruition, but this meteoric rise where he's quarterbacks are going off the board is, 1-4.
Do you really think that's going to happen? Like, honestly, because things happen every year that blow us away. Remember when Malik Willis was supposed to be a top 10 pick?
Right. And Justin and I were like, dude, he's a day two guy all day. He's the top quarterback in this class, but on day two, like you can't take him in the first round.
But
yeah, I mean that's the thing. So,
is it that many? I get two or three in a row, especially with who's up there. The Bears, obviously, they don't have a quarterback.
they virtually have to take one. They don't have a choice.
The Commanders, they traded their starting quarterback. Now, they got Marcus Mariota.
who is always the one you're looking to replace.
Correct. If he starts the season as a starter, is he going to pack up and go home? No, that's a bad joke. I mean, it's what he did, but there was a little more than that, according to the story. I mean, for me, the Patriots are they're always a wild card, but this is not the Bill Belichick Patriots, and Bob Kraft has more or less said that he wants him to draft a quarterback, but I can see it happening where they're the ones that mess up plans for the Cardinals, right? Because if they're like, say if they're two quarterbacks that they like are the two quarterbacks that go number one and number two. And while they are okay with it, they don't love him. And if you like, why would you draft a quarterback top three that you don't love? Because they've got Jacoby Brissett, a guy that's serviceable, right? You've got a serviceable quarterback. And instead of saying, hey, we're going to take a quarterback no matter what, instead go, well, let's take the best player. And they take Harrison and say, Harrison will make Jacoby a better quarterback. And by the way, the Patriots receiving room is as bad as the Cardinals.
Yeah. And the only problem with that, Jess, and I'm not disagreeing with you at all because I am kind of in the same boat.
I can see it happen. I don't think it will happen, but I can see I'm prepared for it.
The quarterback class next year is extra booty. It's bad.
But they could also, but that doesn't mean they don't have to address the quarterback in the draft.
True, and we have seen obviously Kirk Cousins go and be a free agent.
Right.
Obviously.
You know, Russell Wilson's going to be a free agent. Justin Fields is likely going to be a free agent.
You can make a trade, but like, it just feels like it is tempting fate. And it doesn't mean that you draft a guy at number three overall, if that's not your love, because that's the thing is and this sounds crazy, but I would probably rather take a guy like Bo Nix at the top of round two than I would take Jaden Daniels at three overall. And I know that sounds crazy to some people because
because then you can give him a better player to throw to.
Right. And so, you know, if you're the Patriots, you have the 34th pick and you know, two quarterbacks go early and you say, okay, I'm going to grab, you know, Marvin, like you said. It just makes sense. The problem becomes now, Jess, is that there is a push, and I have no idea where it's coming from at all, but there's a push that Bo Nix is going to go in the top 15. And again, that's just baffling to me.
So
there's one
quarterback pick that kind of makes sense to me, and it's not because of where he should be. Michael Penix getting drafted number 16 by the Seahawks makes a lot of sense for a lot of reasons. If you don't necessarily believe in him as a first-round quarterback, he'll be playing in the offense he played in college.
Yeah, and the thing is that you have – so the way that a lot of people are breaking this down now is that you have the Vikings grabbing McCarthy and then the Broncos or the Raiders taking Nix with their first round pick. And ooh. I'm with you, man. I don't see that, you know, but that is a very popular thing.
Teams aren't that dumb, right? Like,
I mean, they are. I mean, look,
sometimes
Kenny Pickett went 20th overall, man. Like it happens. And so, but yeah, I mean, if you're New England, that's the issue you come with, right? Is that if I don't take a guy at three, does a guy get to 34? Does one of these guys, you know, and again, it's not that I love any of these guys, but, you know, does Bo Nix or Michael Penix get to 34? if they don't, how much do you love Spencer Rattler or Michael Pratt, who seem like the next guys in the line to go in day two realm? By the way, I love Michael Pratt. I think he would be ideal backup developmental guy, but if he's going in the third round, absolutely not. If you're going to get him in the fifth round, same area, obviously you got Clayton Tune last year. I make the pull the trigger, make the move, whatever. But you know, that's the hard part, Jess, is if you're New England, can you bet on a guy, or do you just punt it for the next year, 2 years, and say, yeah, we go after Russell Wilson? Like you said, Seattle does something crazy and takes Michael Penix, and okay, do we go after Geno Smith? Like, those are the questions that you have to answer as you go through this.
Ultimately, how many quarterbacks do you think go in the first round? And
I think only four, and only four doesn't, you know, sound like a lot, but I think only four. I think Knicks and Penix fall out. I do.
There's some sense, because there comes a point where, like, once the quarterback needy teams pass once, who's going to draft them in the first round? Because they're the teams that have quarterbacks.
Right. So the teams you look at, I mean, New Orleans on day two, right? And New York, the Jets or Giants, honestly, the Jets too, right? Like, you could, I mean, if you're the Jets and you take a guy,
they won't do that. They won't.
No,
they will not, because that's what the Packers did when Aaron Rodgers was there.
Yeah.
And they're treating Aaron Rodgers differently. And so they're not going to do that. They're putting all their eggs in Aaron Rodgers' basket for the next year or two. And then they'll figure things out after that.
So, obviously, and the Broncos don't look like they have a second-round pick. And, guys, Jess and I don't know enough about the Broncos to know where their draft picks are. So, if we're
76, that's where I know, because we've looked at trading those picks.
Okay. So,
76. Here's the thing. This is where I think Sean Payton, you know, has a thing for J.J. McCarthy, because guess what? If you squint, who's he look like?
Right.
Drew Brees.
So do you think there's a chance that he gets to that area? Because, you know, you and I were having this debate, and this is something that we'll debate, obviously, when we do the mock draft, right? But can they get up from 12? Let's say the Cardinals, you know, don't make the move, and they stay at 4. And then the Charger on the clock. The Chargers want to move down. It's the least well-kept secret in the world. It's not that they wouldn't make the pick, but they just, you know, they want to go down. They, you look at what John Harbaugh has done, and he's basically gutted a lot of that team. And so they want to move down. They want to be able to get, you know, acquire multiple picks. Jim Harbaugh, sorry. And so, like, if Denver wants to move up,
but that's a division team. That's a hard sell too,
right? And it may not be exactly. You're probably right about that. But like, even the Giants or any of these teams, like, not only getting one pick this year, that's a really hard sell. Is it, or are you looking at this going, our grade on McCarthy is not that high? Like, let's do this, and
if that's the case, because this is where, you know, okay, sure, if you can get the Vikings to dish out those three first round picks and then immediately trade up to 5.
Yeah, and that's
perfect. That's perfect. That would be Monty Austin Fort. Build a statue for him. Get the third that way, because then you probably would Jim Harbaugh love 2 first round picks? Absolutely, absolutely would love 2 first round picks, and then the Cardinals would still have 2 first round picks and an extra pick next year, and still have Marvin Harrison. That's the way to do it. But
yeah, and so that's the thing. So, you know, let me ask you this. Are there any quarterbacks that you would be, I mean, you've already kind of mentioned your disdain for the picks anyways. Are there any guys worth just throwing at the wall to you?
You know, like Jordan Reed at ESPN suggested that the Cardinals should, though it wasn't that should, but predicted that the Cardinals would take Florida State's Jordan Travis in the seventh round. And while a seventh round pick is a throwaway pick anyway, as we both know, why would you throw it away on a quarterback unless, and I don't know much about Jordan Travis. I didn't watch Florida State at all this year.
He's a very, very good college quarterback. I don't know how his game, I've never been a, like, I think his game translates. I think he is a phenomenal college quarterback.
But if they, and from all, everything I know, it feels like that the coaches do like Clayton Tune.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, unless they are 100% done with him, you've already got Desmond Ridder. So, I mean, you want a third quarterback. You want a development, a young guy that you're going to try and develop. Unless they are 100% done with Tune, then whatever. But don't draft one.
And here's something crazy. And you know, the COVID thing makes everything really difficult, right? But here's something super crazy. Jordan Travis is the same age, if not older, than Clayton Tune. So he's, you know, he's 6 foot, 200 pounds, coming off a gruesome leg injury, and is 24 years old.
It's not Brandon Whedon old, but it's still.
No, but like that's the thing is like, are you really? Like, again, you're just exchanging lottery tickets. Yeah. Like, you're like,
here's a question. From what we had, there were 14 combine quarterbacks. How many of those quarterbacks ultimately get drafted? You think four will go in round one? How many do you think?
Yeah, I was just counting that.
Let's just run down. Keaton Slovis, you think he gets drafted?
No. I think Hartman, so working backwards, Hartman. I don't think Travis gets drafted either. Age and that injury, but I could be wrong. But Hartman, Milton's going to get drafted, and he's going to be the guy that people fall in love with because he is literally a quarterback built in a lab. He just is not good at it. But you know, anytime you talk about a guy that's 6'5", 246, and ran a 4.640.
Bruce Arians drafted Logan Thomas as a quarterback. Because if Logan Thomas get drafted as a quarterback, Joe Milton get drafted.
Right. So Hartman, Milton, Leary, Pratt, Rattler, and then the top six. So that's 11. And I'll throw one of Travis Reed or Slovis get picked as well. So okay. I would say 12. 12 of the 14.
All right.
Because like you said, in those seventh round, guys just start going, let's just do that.
Yeah, especially if you, like, it's harder than to get a guy undrafted. The wild card, I guess, would you say that the mid-round wild card is Spencer Rattler because of what he was at one point?
Yeah, and he's still shown flashes of brilliance. I mean, just flashes of absolute dazzling brilliance, and you're just like, how's this guy so bad? You know, I don't think he did himself a ton of favors. You know, he came in smaller than expected, which is always interesting, right? I mean, you come in a little smaller than people expected. So he measured at 6 foot and 210 pounds. He ran a 4.95 40, which is
that's not good. Fine.
Yeah, and he's gonna be 24 this year. So I mean, those are, you know, a lot of things. And we shouldn't, I mean, we're talking about Michael Penix, who's a 6 year senior, Bo Nix, who's a 5th year senior, Jane Daniels, who's a 5th year senior. Like, those guys, you know, they've been you look at the number of 6th year seniors in this class, it's ridiculous. But yeah, I think he's the wild card because he's, you know, he's done it. And he's shown these flashes of just absolute brilliance, even as recent as this year. And so for him, it comes down to, like, is there a consistency problem, or is that just his game? Is that who he is? But I mean, you go back to his game against Mississippi State, and I know Mississippi State wasn't great this year, but I mean, 18 for 20, 288 yards, three touchdowns. I mean, those are video game numbers. And it's not like he did that against Furman too, but that's Furman. We're talking about Mississippi State. You know, his game against Kentucky, when, you know, not much was expected, he goes 70% with 200 yards and two touchdowns. He had these flashes in the loss to Florida, 313 yards, 77% completion percentage, and four touchdowns to one interception. Like, he has these flashes, and then he has games where you're like, what are you doing? I mean, against Tennessee, who was a disappointment this year, 169 yards and an interception. Against Georgia, when he has a chance to really, you know, kind of put himself on the map, 52% completions, 256 yards, two interceptions. And you're like, okay, maybe you're not the guy. And so that's the thing. I think he's the guy in that middle round. I still have a hard time seeing anything significant coming.
Coming up next on the Rise Up here at Podcast, FSR Cardinals talking about, of course, we talked for quarterbacks too long. There's actually a position where the Cardinals might actually look at, and that's running back. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, especially our Cardinals talking about running backs. The way we've been talking about the different positions, we go, okay, players are on the first round, day two, day three. We can do this right now. Running backs in the first round? No, none this year. Is there maybe a surprise? Is there anyone that someone might be crazy in drafting the first round this year?
No, I think maybe Jonathan Brooks could have been kind of the tail end, but with his injury.
Right,
and
coming
everything.
Off the ACL, like he's maybe, like, didn't he suffer the ACL in November?
Yeah, November, December area.
Yeah, so yeah, and what they're saying, like, he should be ready for the season, I'm like, that's no, he probably won't. He probably won't be ready for the season. No. remember, Kyler Murray, like, November is kind of like, because that's when Carson Palmer tore his ACL, was the beginning of November. And he was back for the season, but he'd torn his ACL before. He was a 10-year pro in the NFL, and so knew what it took. This will be him coming into an NFL camp, not getting any off-season reps, maybe getting reps in training camp, but probably not. You'll be lucky if he's ready to start the season, and he probably won't be ready to play. Think about last year, Garrett Williams. Garrett Williams was drafted by the Cardinals in the third round, coming off an ACL tear that happened in October.
Right.
He told us at the draft that he was supposed to be cleared by training camp. Guess what? He was not. He was not cleared for by training camp, and he didn't come back till midseason. But part of that is simply, I think the NFL teams have a plan. Like, if you have a rookie coming off an ACL tear, they're missing all the mental reps in OTAs and mini camp and all those off-season reps. They're missing all of them. And so unless you've got an absolute special player, and Jonathan Brooks might be good. I'm not going to say he, like, you're talking about a guy who might have sneaked into the first round at the end. And do you think, and then that brings us to the next question. Even coming off the ACL tear, do you think he will still be the first running back drafted, and will it be in round two?
If a running back goes in round two, I think it's going to be Trey Benson, the Florida State running back. He really, you know, kind of combined a solid finish to his college career with a spectacular display at the combine. You look at what he did the last 2 years at Florida State, 994 yards last year, which is 6.5 yards per carry. And then remember, he had to then take the load on when Jordan Travis got injured, and he averaged 5.8 yards per carry, 23 touchdowns. And that was in a split back attempt. He had barely over 150 carries each of those seasons. He's a good all-around back, excellent size, build, hasn't had any injuries, you know, came in at 6 foot, 216, 4'3", 940 with a 10'2 broad jump, like, seems like a very explosive player. Does a nice job in both gap and zone scheme, which is really becoming kind of the thing in the NFL that you have to be able to do. If somebody goes for, I think he's going to be the first running back off the board. And I think it will be in the latter part of round two. You know, you mentioned Brooks. Love what he brought. He reminds me a lot of Kenyon Drake. And Drake went in the third round, like early-ish in the third round. I think he's going to go in the same area. I think without the injury, he probably would have gone on day two. Like you said, maybe snuck into round one. He's averaged over 6 yards a carry in his career. But again, last year, you're only talking about 30 carries. Like, he wasn't going to get reps over Bijan and the kid that went to the Bears in the fourth round. Yeah, Roschon Johnson. So that's the thing you have to look at. It's not that he's bad, but it's also that he couldn't get the carries over two guys that were going
to
the NFL.
Isn't necessarily a bad thing, that because that means
he's had the wear and tear is low.
Less wear and tear entering the NFL. The Cardinals have a good running back room right now. You feel very comfortable with where they're at. James Conner's a starter. You've got Michael Carter coming back. Nice complement in terms of his electric running, his speed. They bring in DJ Dallas, and they have Amari DiMercato, who proved as an undrafted rookie to be very reliable. And so now Dallas is under contract for 3 years, and DiMercato is under control for two more years. Not that you want to count on DiMercato. What would be the absolute, would you say, and I would say, and would you agree, that the Cardinals shouldn't sniff a running back till round three?
Yeah, I would say round three at the earliest. And there's a couple, and that's kind of what we have to figure out, Jess, is what are they looking for? Are they looking for a potential James Conner replacement? And we don't mean like, hey, you're replacing James Conner. What we're meaning is like, oh, James Conner misses three or four games, like he tends to do every year. And that's not a shot at James Conner. That's his style, his ruggedness, all of that stuff. So are they looking for that, or are they looking to, you know, replace it Amari DiMercato? Are they looking to replace Michael Carter? Like you said, their running back room seems set-ish. But if you have a guy that you love, where does he fit? You know, guys that I love, like, love, obviously Trey Benson, I mentioned him, but I wouldn't sniff him because I don't think you're going to – I would – so you said third round, and I 100% agree with that take. I wouldn't take any of them until 90, that 90th pick.
Okay,
I mean,
that makes sense.
Barring that they don't trade it, but I wouldn't take any of them until 90. So obviously if Trey Benson or Jonathan Brooks end up in that range, you're like, I think you well, all of a sudden it's that best player available.
Right,
if
Benson's there at 66 or 71, right, that might be worth it, but.
Right.
But how about the two running backs that we, okay, there's two running backs that we know the Cardinals have significant interest in because they have top 30 visits. Ray Davis out of Kentucky and Dylan Johnson out of Washington.
So Ray Davis is really intriguing because he is old. He's 25 years old. he is a well put together guy. So he was at Temple, then he was at Vandy.
Yeah,
and then
he had an NFL career. He played three different, so he's like a journeyman college player.
Right. So he'll be 25 this year in November.
And produced at all three places, by the way. Freshman year, 980 yards as a freshman at Temple. He rushed for over 1,000 yards at Vandy and then over 1,000 yards again for Kentucky last year.
Correct. And he was highly productive in his first and last season. And to get over 1,000 yards at Vandy last year was a sight to behold, if we're not, you know, if not trying to be rude, but it just was. But he is the opposite end of what you just talked about with Jonathan Brooks. Over 700 or over 850 touches in his career already. So a lot of wear on those tires already. But
he does everything well as well.
He catches the ball well.
Yeah. He's good in pass protection, which is, you know, honestly, that's why DiMercato made the team.
Right, and he does everything well. He is a patient and rugged runner, and he you know, and he's a guy that fits what they're looking for probably in round four. So was that 105 they have right there?
Yeah.
And so I think that would be a nice fit in that range, because again, you're not talking about a pick that's going to cost you much in terms of anything in terms of overly expensive or overly early. You know, with Johnson, it's interesting. He, again, he was a Mississippi State kid, transferred to Washington, obviously was their kind of guy this year. He'll be 23 in June, so not overly older. So nothing wrong with that.
That 40 time, though. Eesh.
Yeah, he is a plotter in every sense of the word. He has excellent decision making and initial burst, but he doesn't have much long speed. He's not going to burn guys. He's not going to break big plays. He has a little James Conner in him in the sense that he's excellent and well versed in the passing game, coming from Mike Leach's Mississippi State before Mike passed. You know, you look at it, just this dude had 65 catches his sophomore year and 48 his junior year. Like, that's absurd for a running back, right? And so he's well versed in that range. Here's the biggest concern you have with this guy. He gets nicked up all the time. He had nagging knee injury in 2023. He had a bad knee injury in 2022 that he played through. And then obviously he was hurt in the championship game and played through it. So he plays through things, but he just doesn't, he seems to get, because of his style, is banged up a lot. And again, reminds me a heck of a lot of James Conner, and because of all of that too, right? Like, that was kind of James's issue. He loves to run, he loves to bang, and he doesn't go down. You know, I think they're both good fits with what the Cardinals want. But here's the nice thing about Johnson. You're talking probably like sixth round type stuff with him. Because there are just too many questions about, like you said, one, the athleticism, and then two, when you're that banged up in college, guys don't just all of a sudden get healthy in the league, right?
it's a much, like, again, grown man league. Grown man.
Right.
These guys are big, but strong, solid. Yeah, it's a different world.
But we have 24, 25-ish that are probably going to get drafted.
I heard on one of those shows that Audric Estime might be the most capable to be in, like, a feature back. But he's slow.
Yeah, he did not run well. But the crazy thing is, Jess, I think he reached 21 miles per hour.
Really good.
Yeah, and so he just, I don't know if he just ran poorly or what.
So maybe that's anomalous, because his vertical's a 38-inch vert, and broad 125-inch. Those are really, really good. But it's just his 40 was
awful. Legitimately awful. You know, and I look at him, he's played in that Notre Dame offense that runs a lot of gap and zone, which is what the Cardinals like to do. You know, they like to run both. Like you said, his testing numbers outside of the 40 are insane. And so that's what the question becomes. 5'11", 221, him at pick 90 just seems, you know, or pick 105, that seems like a little too on the nose almost, right? Like, a guy that built like James, not as tall, obviously, but built like James, runs a lot like James, had poor testing numbers, but man, he looked good. And then the other guy that is basically a James Conner clone, a little bit shorter, but Braylon Allen, the 19-year-old running back, I think he's actually 20 now. Yeah, he just turned 20 out of Wisconsin, 6'1", 235. This guy is, I mean, he is big and he is physical. And so, but he's coming from Wisconsin where it's been, you know, a mixed bag of results for their runners, right? Every Jonathan Taylor that is the best running back in the NFL, you get a Monty Ball. and so it's just one of those situations where if you
and
him,
he didn't do any testing because of an high ankle sprain that he had, that so he didn't test the combine, he didn't test at his pro day. So
but he's allegedly like a free, like he allegedly ran like a 4.4 coming out of high school at the same weight or right around the same weight.
Okay.
So he's again allegedly a super athlete. So, I mean, again, if you're talking in round four and he's there, I'm all over that because I feel like that's your, again, not trying to replace James Conner, but a James Conner replacement for if, when it's needed.
What about guys, look at some of the burners. Okay. They've got a couple of speed guys. One, Jalen Wright, 5'10", 210, 4.38, 40. He's a legit burner. You get a little bit lighter. The other Texas running back, Keelan Robinson, 5'8", 191 at 4.42. Any of those, and then, Louisville.
Yeah, Isaac Garindo.
6'2", 220, 4.33. His testing numbers were out of this world because he broke 7 seconds on the three cone. So at 6'2", 220, so not only does he have the straightaway speed, he's got the change of direction. 41.5-inch vertical, 129-inch broad, so he's explosive, he's quick on his feet, and he has breakaway speed.
Yeah, he's a freak, and you know what's interesting, Jess, about Garindo? So he started at Wisconsin, I believe. So, you know, obviously Wisconsin gets all the best running backs and then filters them out. And I'm just double-checking. I want to make sure I'm right on that, but he ends up at Louisville and when he was at, yeah. And so first thing with him is he's old. He he's dealt with a lot of injuries. So you look at it, 2018, he was a redshirt freshman or redshirted at Wisconsin. 2019 missed 8 games with a hamstring. 2020 missed the final 6 games with a hamstring. 2021, 23 carries just for 160 yards. For those of us not doing math quickly, that's a 7 yard per carry. But he only got to play in 4 games because he got hurt again. And then his final year, 2022 at Wisconsin, he really struggled, only running for 6 yard per carry. But again, just 64 carries. So then he got to Louisville, 132 carries, 810 yards. Again, over 6 yards a carry, 11 touchdowns. But here's the craziest stat, Jess. 41 games played, 231 carries, just under 1,400 yards, 6 yards per carry, 17 touchdowns, 42 catches. He had one start in his career. He's never been a starter. So
do you think those testing numbers would,
right,
would a team like the Cardinals have 2 fifth round picks?
That's exactly where he belongs. Like 138, 138, 162. If he's there, that's a flyer you take because this guy has insane elite testing numbers. And he has shown when he gets a chance, he performs. He just doesn't have the greatest patience and vision. And you know, he kind of reminds me of Fast Willie Parker. You remember him that was with the Steelers. Yeah. And it's just like this guy, he has that special gear that very few people have. And the difference being Willie went undrafted, you know, so that makes it a lot harder to take. But like you said, in the fifth round, and remember, Willie ran his 3-year streak. He ran for just under 4,000 yards in 3 seasons, and then really tapered off. But we're talking about a guy, again, who you look at his numbers at North Carolina, I mean, nothing special. And so you just, sometimes you take a shot on the athlete and see if it works out. Garrido is that guy that you're talking about, Jess.
Jalen Wright, another speedy guy, 5'10". Where was he? Where'd he go? I skipped those. 5'10", 210, 4.38 speed.
And he's at least younger. Garrido's 24.
he's my age.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Who am I kidding? I'm almost 50. Stop that.
And he's only 21, just turned 21. So he's a legit, like, 2021 kid. You know, and he had a great year last year, Jess,
as the
number two guy.
Yeah, yeah. 7.4 yards per carry, over 1,000 yards. And over the last two seasons, 6.0, 7.4. And so you saw production that way. He caught 22 passes as well for Tennessee last year. The mock drafts say round 3. I don't know if that's actually going to be true.
That seems a little rich, but we've seen guys like him go, and I've seen comps I really like, which is Jerome Ford, the running back for the Cleveland Browns, who had a really nice season. Ford came out of Cincinnati via Alabama, and then had, you know, all he did was run for 813 yards this year for the Cleveland Browns once their fantastic running Nick Chubb went down again. So, I mean, again, the question with Wright is, where's the right spot? Is 90 a good spot? I struggle with that.
It also depends on who else is on the board.
Right. But yeah, he's a freak athlete, has incredible athleticism across the board, not just in the 40, but verts and broad jump. Didn't do any of the agility testing. But with running backs, if they run fast, it's not a big deal if they don't have great agility, because you just ask them to hit the hole, be one cut and go, as opposed to guys that, you know, like Audric Estime, who has to have good feet and be able to flow through things. So the base thing with Wright's going to be, he's not great reading his blocks and really letting things develop. And he tends to be kind of a smash into the hole guy. So what ends up happening with him is, you know, obviously he's not going to run for 7 yards a carry in the NFL, but if he runs for, let's say, close to 5 yards a carry as a part-time guy, it's going to be 1 yard, 1 yard, 1 yard, 15, 20 yards. Yeah. Yeah. So he'll be that type of runner. So, which isn't a bad thing. I mean, you need those guys. So I like, you know, this is a really nice, rounds 3 to 5 running back class. We didn't, you know, we didn't mention Dylan Lobb out of New Hampshire or Will Shipley. Blake Corum is a guy I absolutely love, but I don't know with Corum. My biggest concern with Corum is he's not super advanced in the passing game. And so you're asking, you know, you're making a projection out of that, and to see if he can be a guy that can play all 3 downs, because that's the thing, is he is built a lot like Ray Rice. His game is very similar to Ray Rice. Incredibly insanely productive for the last 3 years. I mean, 27 freaking touchdowns last year it's absurd.
Yeah.
But
also, he's got over 500 carries over the last 2 seasons.
Yeah, over 700 touches in his career, which, again, going back to Ray Davis, is why that number is absurd, that he has over 800 touches in his career, because you don't see running backs that get that many touches in college.
Yeah. Any sneaky guys, like we've talked about the athletes, but is there anyone to know for day three?
Yeah, I think a lot of people will talk about, obviously, Frank Gore Jr., but there's a couple guys I like. Mayan Williams at Ohio State, he put up really good numbers last year or 2 years ago, and then just, you know, couldn't stay healthy this year. But he's a guy that has been, you know, productive on the big stage and had decent numbers. And he's a very well put together back at 5'8", 230 pounds. He didn't do any testing because of the knee injury, which kept him out of the final six games. But last year, you know, averaged over 6 yards a carry. The year before that, averaged over 7 yards a carry as a part-time guy. So he is a guy that I feel like could, again, that could be a guy that comes in and wins some stuff, but, you know, he's not overtly athletic. And so you're not looking at him going, oh man, this guy's going to absolutely kill it. Instead, you look at him and you go, I know what I'm going to get. Kind of a bigger version of Amari DiMercato, you know, in that sense.
Coming up next on the Rise of Zero podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's move on to the final position on offense that we're going to discuss. That is tight ends. That's coming up next on Rise of Zero. We're back on the Rise of Zero podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. The Cardinals have a great tight end in Trey McBride. They have a promising tight end in Elijah Higgins. Could they use another tight end? We agree that they probably need a blocking tight end. How soon should the Cardinals even look at the tight end position? Should they wait all the way till day three? Then just don't worry about anybody else because of Trey McBride, because of the potential that they see in Elijah Higgins?
You know, it just becomes a question of what you're looking for. Obviously, the big name at the top is Brock Bowers. I don't know if they would take him in a trade back scenario. You know,
then they really
up.
Would have the running back in tight. They would be the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, they really would. You know, you look at Bowers, he could be similar to George Kittle as a pass catcher. He's got to, you know, develop as a run blocker more. But he looks like he's going to be a star. Then you get into the really, interesting ones. Because you've got a couple guys that absolutely blew away the combine in a number of ways, and so then you start to go, okay, is this a guy that fits what the Cardinals want to do? And the first one, and a guy that looked really good, like I said, at the combine, actually had an excellent final season. I don't know if it was his final season or if he came out early, final season at Penn State, was Theo Johnson. Came in at 6'6", 259, and blew away the combine, Jess. I mean, we're talking about a guy that 260 pounds, and he ran a 4.57 40, had a 39.5-inch vertical, and then ran a 4.19 short shuttle and a 7.153 cone. So like this guy just cooked at the combine, exactly what you would want. The Penn State, you know, thing, he isn't Pat Freiermuth. And who was the other one that just came out of there? Goodness gracious. I'm having a hard time remembering his name, but you know, he can play outside, stretched out, and he can play in line. He works hard as a blocker, but you would think for his size, Jess, and physicality and athleticism, that he would do a little more. He just lacks a meanness, but we've seen, because that was some of the question about Trey, right, coming out, was his blocking ability.
Yeah, absolutely. It was very odd because like all the scouting reports said not that great a blocker, yet what did he, they had a heavy running offense, so he had to block a lot.
Yeah, and so that's kind of how that always goes, right? Like they grab a guy and then force him to do what he's not good at and make him good at it. And that's kind of what Theo Johnson is going to be. I mean, that's the thing that's crazy to me is it just feels like it's 6'6", 260. You shouldn't have a hard time blocking at all.
Just stay in front of the guy.
Right. Just
push him.
His biggest issue to me is that he's not super great in terms of his routes because he's gotten away with just being bigger and more physical. But he is, like I said, he's a good blocker, a good receiver, decent blocker, off gives you a lot though. Cade Stover out of Ohio State's another one, 6'4", 250. With Stover, he's not going to be the best blocking tight end, but man, he works hard. You know, that's the difference between like Johnson and Stover's. You know, Johnson knows he has to block and will do it because he has to, but Stover will try to block and give you everything he's got. He feels like kind of the ideal number two tight end, with Higgins being kind of that pseudo number two H-back tight end type of guy. And he, you know, in that 90 to 105 range. Ben Sinnott out of Kansas State's another guy. Another guy that had a great combine. 6'4",
250. Yeah. That three cone is 6'8", 2. What is he, a defensive right. back?
Right. He moves with explosive movements, and he is a really bordering on great blocker. I mean, bordering on great, which, you know, is in what you're talking about, what they're looking for, right? Like kind of what they're looking for in that sense. But he works his butt off, and he's a very strong at the point of attack blocker. And like you said, this elite athlete that can move and line up anywhere. And because of that, that's why he's so intriguing to me at that, you know, 105 spot, because you're not just talking about a guy that will block, but a guy that you can move into the backfield as a fullback, a guy that you can split out as a slot receiver. I mean, he literally can do it all. The guy in round five that I would jump at, and he had another phenomenal combine, is the 6'5", 270-pound man-child
of
Tip Reiman. Yeah. Reiman ran a 4.640, and a 4.26 short.
His vertical seemed, it was anomalous, but like he got the speed. You had the 10-foot broad jump, but then 33.5-inch vert, which I know I'm picking a 33-inch vert when I probably might not go 20 inches myself. Sorry. I'm picking nits here. I'm sorry. But no, in addition to that, Raymond's a really good blocker already.
Yeah, he is a great. And like he relishes that, which is, like you said, that's different. You don't get a lot of guys that relish that.
Instead of a tight end turned offensive lineman, like a lot of guys end up doing because they're not quite good enough at tight end, so they bulk him up and put him inside. He's an offensive lineman who's athletic enough to play tight end.
Right. And so he is a guy that I just think, you know, makes a lot of sense. Like I said, if you get him at 104, 138, I think it's a home run, man. Like that's genuinely one of my favorite picks in the draft.
What about Eric Aull, Iowa? Iowa tight ends have to be able to block, right? That's a requirement.
Yeah. Aull is interesting because he has, you kind of expected him to break out every year, and he just never did it. Came in at 6'4", 252, couldn't test because of his knee injury. He blew out his knee.
Oh, so, that's right. I remember that. So he's might not be draftable.
Well, and so the knee is one thing, but this dude had a spinal surgery his last year at Michigan. So
never mind.
Here's the thing. If he's healthy, that's, you know, the big question. I am 100%, and you haven't drafted one, 186, 226, great flyer, because he checks all the boxes.
Better than drafting a quarterback still.
Right. And he checks all the boxes. he looks like he can move. He obviously can block, like you said, Michigan and Iowa. You don't get reps at those places if you can't block. It's just the reality of playing tight end there. So yeah, I really like all, but he has medical red flags that are just really can't be overlooked. Brevin Span Ford is another guy I really like, that, you know, you're talking round 6 or 7. He is a monster at 6'6", 260, but not the athlete that the other guys are. And he's older. He's going to be 25 this season. He stuck around all, he rode the boat for a long time up there at Minnesota. He works really hard as a blocker. What's interesting is he is a very, smooth athlete, even though he didn't like test overly well. But he looks smooth, and he looks, everything he does is kind of effortless. But again, at 6'6", 260, why didn't you take over games? You know, you look at what Theo Johnson did this year at the same size, over 900 yards receiving. You look at Tip Ryman. He is a monster as a blocker, a little shorter, but, you know, and a little heavier. But this dude, like you said, is a sixth offensive lineman. When he's Spanford never really reached any of that, but he's got the goods to do it. He just never put it together consistently. And that's what makes him kind of a tough read. But again, if you're talking about that sixth, seventh round, I don't think those are bad choices.
Yeah. And those are, we look at that, probably the Cardinals, especially, I guess if we have to look at it this way, especially with the holes that they have, especially on the defensive side of the ball, tight end might be kind of an afterthought. I mean, they did.
That's why I said if you can get Ryman at 138, I truly think that would be a slam dunk.
That would be, yeah, that'd be great. And since the one thing that we said that they need a veteran blocking tight end, and if they can bring back Jeff Swaim, that's fantastic. But if you can draft a guy that can be that guy, well, then you've got yourself a really special young tight end room in Trey McBride and Elijah Higgins and Tip Ryman. That would be kind of fun. And
I do just want to throw Jared Wiley, the TCU tight end. He's kind of like Jatavion Sanders. They're both phenomenal. I don't want anybody to think that we're overlooking them. I just don't see them. I mean, you can always use fantastic athletic tight ends. Wiley's a more willing blocker than Sanders. I just don't, again, I don't think drafting one at 61 or whatever or 66, sorry, is ideal. And I don't think he gets to 90.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Here at Podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the Web. We have completed our offensive NFL draft preview for the Cardinals. We will have a pair of shows next week that cover the defensive side of the ball before we roll into draft week with one show alone. And that will be our first round mock draft, because obviously after that, Thursday will be the NFL draft, and we will be quite busy with that. And I, with as much writing as we both have to do, as fun as a either live recording, like I guess we wouldn't be broadcasting it live, but kind of a real-time reaction talking about the draft as it's happening, That's just not in my wheelhouse right now. I can't do it.
It is a much more difficult and different of experience.
Yeah. But with that, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess. We'll be back next week with two more draft preview shows. Thanks for listening as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, rise up, Sea Red.